Doucette standing in for Dick Gordon. This is The Connection. Imagine a website where you could place bets on the likelihood of a terror attack in the United States or the growing strength of Palestinian militancy in the Gaza Strip. Then consider that the people who plan to put this virtual casino on the World Wide Web were not 16-year-old computer geeks, but some of the top minds in the U.S. defense establishment. Well, until a week ago, such a virtual trading parlor was the plan of DARPA, the U.S. Defense Advanced Research Projects Agency from the Pentagon. They called it a policy analysis market. They wanted to create a market using the same tool which has long been used successfully to predict horse races, commodity prices, and political elections. Now it was going to be used to predict terror. The experts say the markets work because they effectively harness collective intelligence. And they aggregate information from different sources in a very efficient way. Such is the beauty of markets. Well, Go Connection listeners, Congress killed the Pentagon's plan. Even Paul Wolfowitz, the Deputy Defense Secretary, called it too imaginative. But some say it was a very good idea. In this hour, we're asking, is there anything too imaginative when it comes to intelligence gathering? Is a futures market for predicting terrorist attacks really ethically wrong? What if it worked? In which ways is it morally different from the more orthodox ways of gathering information? We'd like to know what you think. Our number is 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK to join in the conversation. Well, joining us today to discuss the logic and morals behind a futures market for news events and terrorism is Joseph Stiglitz. He's the winner of the 2001 Nobel Prize for Economics. He now teaches economics and finance at Columbia University. He's joining us here on The Connection from New York City. We'll also be joined from New York by James Surowiecki. He's a financial columnist for The New Yorker. But first, let's turn to Robin Hanson. He's an assistant professor of economics at George Mason University. He consulted the Defense Advanced Research Project Agency on the futures market. In fact, some people say he's the architect of this plan. Robin Hanson, tell us about the original idea for an online futures market for terrorism and other political events.
Well, it wasn't intended to be a market on terrorism primarily. We were trying to predict major geopolitical events in the Middle East, whether there'll be high levels of civil unrest, riots or peace or regime changes, whether there'll be wars or peace or mobilization, whether economies would tank or grow. Those are the major events we were trying to predict in the Middle East. We were also going to throw in some measure, overall measure of terrorist activity in the Western world. This wasn't trying to predict individual attacks. It was going to allow people to say things like, if we move our troops out of Saudi Arabia, maybe that'll make people less mad and maybe that'll reduce terrorist attacks in the United States. So we wanted our markets to be able to express estimates like that.
Well, it may not just have been a market for predicting terrorist attacks, but it did come out of the concern after the September 11th attacks in the United States that the intelligence gathering agencies weren't doing its job properly. And perhaps you needed another mechanism to try to alert us to possible events in the future.
Well, the project started before 9/11, actually, but the interest increased, of course, after the big event.
Tell us how it would have worked. Who would have been trading?
Well, the original intention was to open it up to anybody in the world, particularly people who in the Middle East might know better. You would go to a website.
Know better in the sense of that they were actually planning the attack or were studying the attacks?
Again, we weren't trying to predict individual attacks. We're trying to predict overall events in the Middle East. We were trying to predict things like whether moving the troops out of Saudi Arabia would, you know, reduce unrest in Saudi Arabia, whether a peace between Israel and Palestine would make things go better in the rest of the region.
But anyone could make bets. They could go online, they could enter this market and say,
right,
I put my money on that this Middle East leader could be assassinated within a year.
Again, we weren't doing assassinations. We weren't doing individual terrorist attacks. We were doing overall geopolitical events.
Let's change. I want to put my bet to say that Syria will become more unstable over the next year.
That's right. So you would go to a map on the web page. You would look at Syria. You would say, show me the fourth quarter of 2004, and it would show you the probability distribution over unrest in Syria in the fourth quarter of 2004. It might say that very high levels of unrest, there was a 7% chance. You might say to yourself, I think that's too high. I think it's really only 4%. You might say you want to move the number to 4%, and then the system would tell you what bet would be required to make that. It would say, well, if the following things turns out, you'll make this much money, but if the following other event turns out, you'll lose this much money, do you want to go ahead? And you've said yes, then you would have moved that number down to 4%. And somebody else could come along an hour or a week later and change the number again.
But why was it needed? There's the Central Intelligence Agency, the CIA, there's the Defense Intelligence Agency of the Defense Department, and there's, you know, at the very most basic level, there's journalists in the field who are also following the events. Why did we need a market?
Well, it's not, we weren't going to have a different set of people necessarily. We wanted to have all those people participate in our markets. It's more a question of which institution is there to combine the opinions and beliefs of different people.
But wasn't there a side of it that said, do we really want people to make money, to profit from getting it right when it comes to some political event which could have harmful consequences?
Intelligence is fundamentally not a polite thing to do. In the name of intelligence basically is paying people to tell you about bad things that might happen. We do that in different ways. This was a new way to do that. In the name of intelligence so far, people lie, cheat, steal, kill, and worse. We thought we were proposing much less.
Well, I know you've been quoted as saying you regret it that people focused on the more sensational aspects of it. For example, when would Yasser Arafat be killed? And then the plan actually died a death. But there are many who are saying, oh, what a pity, it could have worked. Let's bring in James Surowiecki now, who's on the line from New York, a financial columnist for The New Yorker. James Surowiecki, you say, what with great regret that this was actually something which could have helped make the world a safer place.
Yeah, I think certainly it was worth the experiment, and for many of the reasons that Professor Hansen has already talked about. I think the fact that the story was pitched in such a way, in other words, it was sort of unveiled at this press conference last Monday, which focused really exclusively on the sort of, you know, possibility of predicting specific terrorist events, obviously really doomed the plan. But I think that there's a long track record now of markets successfully predicting not just obvious things like futures prices in, say, the corn market or in other traditional commodities, but there's a good empirical record of markets being used to predict things like election results, box office results, obviously, as you mentioned, horse races. And to that extent, I think that this had a real possibility to offer new insight into the Middle East.
But what is the hidden hand, the mechanism by which it works in all those places? And you thought that particular device, that kind of energy could be used in political events?
Well, I may think about the way these markets work a little bit differently from the way other people do. I mean, I mainly view it as a kind of way of simply aggregating information, and in the same way that, say, Google does. And when you go to Google and you enter in whatever you're looking for, Google does a remarkably good job of giving you the exact web page you're looking for. Google does that by complicated algorithms. I think that the reason these markets work well is essentially that they force people to consider their choices more seriously than they might otherwise, which is to say they actually ask them to put a price, so to speak, on what their actual beliefs are. And I mean, as you said, we have CIA analysts, we have policy analysts, we have intelligence people, we have journalists, but there is really no mechanism to bring all of those people together and, more importantly, to ask them to think about the problems using what amounts to a common currency. Can I say one other? Sorry, go ahead.
Yes, please. One more thing.
Well, what in terms of how why I think this might have worked, I recently read Richard Kapuscinski's book Shav Shahs, which is a book about the Iranian Revolution, which of course came as something of a surprise to U.S. intelligence agencies. And in that book, he there's a moment where he's talking to an Iranian man who talks about how about 8 months before the Iranian Revolution occurred, something changed. He says, I didn't know exactly what it was, but you could feel it on the street that something was different about the way people were acting and thinking about the future. And it's that kind of small piece of information, those tiny pieces of information all put together, that I think a market like this might have been able to aggregate.
That's interesting, because whether it was the revolution in Iran or the September 11th attacks, people said, oh, my goodness, we didn't expect this. What a shock. But will those online futures markets, would they have really helped us make sense of it all and, in fact, to be alert that this could be happening? We're going to have Joseph Stiglitz join us now, who teaches economics and finance at Columbia University. Joseph Stiglitz, you wrote that this idea was absurd. Tell us why.
Well, the issue is clearly that markets do in many cases aggregate information and do a remarkably good job. The problem is this kind of information, the information about terrorism, is not the arena in which this is likely to be done well, and the result is it could actually cause problems. Let me try to explain. The context in which it markets do well is when particular people have particular information that they bring to bear. The farmers in futures markets know something about their own crop. And when they all use that information, you get a reasonably good predictor. There are certain areas like in foreign exchange markets where there's actually remarkable unreliability. They aren't a very, very reliable predictor. The area of terrorism is one in which particular individuals may know a lot of information, but those are not people that are likely to reveal that information.
In other words, they could be the groups involved in the political activity that we're trying
exactly.
to
and these
be better
markets
informed
are likely,
about.
Exactly. And these markets are likely to be thin. And because they're thin, they can be manipulated. And because they can be manipulated, those in the market who might want anxiety levels to go up could make the price go up. And when they want there to be a false set of security, they can make it manipulated to go in the opposite direction.
When you say thin, you mean there's going to be a very small number of people who will actually play this market.
Exactly. And when you have markets that are reasonably thin, not that many people playing in the markets, they are very easily manipulated. Even markets for commodities like cocoa are not markets that often accord with standard competitive principles because there are a few players like the large cocoa producers, Nestle's and Cadbury's, that have a lot more information than others. And since everybody knows that, they're other players are reluctant to play on it in a very significant way.
Well, let me just bring in Robin Hanson now, who was the brain behind this idea. What do you say of Joseph Stiglitz's comment? The market was too thin, too specialized.
Well, the first thing to say is that this was a research project. In response to these concerns that were brought up on Monday, basically all research into using markets for the Department of Defense has been canceled. Maybe Joseph Stiglitz is right. Maybe they wouldn't do well. But shouldn't we do some research to find out first?
One of the problems, though, is that the way they were conceiving of doing research was not and costing an enormous amount of money was not likely to shed a lot of light on it. There were going to be 1,000 people participating in the market. That meant almost by definition it was going to be a relatively small number of people. And the real test of it is what would happen if you have a large number. The question is, are you going to open up the market to terrorists in the Middle East? And if you are...
Well, you'd have to. They're the people who've got the information that you need.
Exactly. Now, if you had ways of tracing how they bet on this market, you would then be able to catch them. So on the one hand, you're caught in this dilemma. If you have ways of tracing the information, you ought to use them and do something, put them in prison.
Exactly. Just to say that, keep that thought, because we're going to continue discussing here on The Connection the idea of an online futures market for terrorism. Was it a good idea which went badly wrong? Robin Hanson, thank you very much for joining us. He was the man who was actually behind the idea that had to be abandoned by the Pentagon last week. We still want to hear from you, though. 1-800-423-8255. Or 1-800-423-TALK. I'm Lise Doucette on The Connection. Stay with us. I'm Lise Doucette, standing in for Dick Gordon. You're listening to The Connection. And this day we are focusing on an online futures market for terrorism. Was it a good idea? Well, it's too late to ask, it seems, because last week the Pentagon killed the idea after there was an outrage over a market being used to predict terrorist attack, that people could actually make money by getting it right when it comes to some kind of political event that could, in fact, be harmful. Was it a good idea, and should it have been kept going? We have two guests here, James Siricki, who's the financial columnist for The New Yorker. He thinks it was a good idea. What a pity. And Joseph Stiglitz, former World Bank economist and a Nobel Prize winner for economics, who now teaches economics and finance at Columbia University. James Siricki, let's pick up on that point by Joseph Stiglitz. It simply was too rare of a market, too thin for it to actually have been very reliable.
Well, I think the question here is, are we debating whether or not the actual market that DARPA was trying to put in place was a good idea, or whether the caricature of the market that the press gave in the last week was a good idea.
But let me take on this idea of caricature, because this is what also Robin Hanson said, that people got upset when it was said that it would be used to predict perhaps the assassination of Yasser Arafat or King Abdullah of Jordan. But those would be the issues that would matter the most to the Pentagon. So at the end of the day, worrying about whether or not there would be a drought in Gaza was less relevant than whether or not there would be something which would actually have a major impact on political developments. Is that not fair?
I'm not sure I actually agree with you. I mean, the drought in Gaza, perhaps, certainly, but the impact on Saudi stability of withdrawing troops from Saudi Arabia, I would suspect, is probably, in the larger scheme of things, more important to the United States than perhaps even the assassination of Arafat. But if I could just maybe take a second and just set out how I think this was going to work, and then we can figure out whether or not it was a good idea or not. I mean, essentially, the vast majority of the contracts that were going to be offered on this exchange, in other words, the bets that people were going to be allowed to make, were going to be in three areas. They were going to be in economic stability, civil health, and military preparedness. And essentially what would happen was the Economist Intelligence Unit, which is the sort of Economist magazine's research unit, they compile these indexes and they say, you know, the economic stability of Jordan is X, and it's on a scale. So effectively, the way the bets would work would we would say if trading started today, the baseline for civil stability in Jordan would be 100. And so a typical contract, I think, might ask you something like, will stability in Jordan be, you know, 108, or will it be 86 in August of 2004? And so that was what I was talking about when I was talking about the example of Iran. Those are the kinds of things that actually I don't think information is concentrated in very few hands. I don't think that's a situation where you have the kind of asymmetries of information that, as Professor Stiglitz has shown, can really distort markets. I actually think those are the kinds of questions that people in the Middle East, policy analysts in the world, probably have bits of information that are just not accessible to the United States. I think these were really the kinds of questions that, you know, an Israeli businessman, a Palestinian academic, those were the kinds of questions that they might very well have been able to answer. Now, there were also going to be these specific event securities, which are the ones that have gotten everybody up in an uproar. But my impression from talking to Charles Polk, who is the president of the company that was running the market, is that most of those specific event securities would have been something like, will Hamas decide to join the PA coalition? Will Mahmoud Abbas still be head of the Palestinian Authority in August of 2004? Again, obviously, the people who run Hamas have a better sense of whether or not they're going to join, you know, put down their arms and join the coalition. On the other hand, it's not at this moment, it's not exactly clear that that's not information that other people might have some good sense of whether it will come true or not. So I think the concerns about manipulation and few participants would obviously be true if the market were asking you, you know, when is the next suicide bombing going to take place in Israel? My impression is that just was not a question that anybody thought this market could answer.
Well, let me bring in Joseph Stiglitz. Joseph Stiglitz was meant to predict much more mundane events and had a good capability for doing that.
Well, markets work well in those contexts. I think the key issue is the one that just has been identified, that is this the kind of market where expertise is more relevant, or is it the kind of market in which there's disparate information that can be brought together? And I think there are some situations where disparate information can be brought together about general moods. And I think that would have been useful. I do agree. The specific event security, the assassinations, the death, the particular events that are the most problematic. Let me give you an example. If you're talking about what is going to be the next innovation in a highly technical area, you don't expect the widespread market participants to know about that kind of thing. You don't expect the millions of people who participate in stock markets to know about that kind of thing. That kind of information is likely to be best elicited from the experts. Many of the kinds of situations that we were identifying before are events in which specific people do have inside information, in which they know whether that event is likely to occur. And those are not situations where markets will do a very good job of revealing what's really going on. There could be a lot of activity, but they won't reveal a lot of information, and that those markets are more likely to be manipulable.
Okay, Joseph, stay with us, and James, stay with us, because we're going to take some callers now. Our phone lines are ringing. People obviously have a lot they want to say about this. Matthew is now on the line from Louisville in Kentucky. Matthew, what do you think of this idea?
Well, I just have a simple comment. Basically, I feel like our current administration and the government is putting too much time, money, and effort into the wrong places. Seems to me our best way to prevent terrorism and protect ourselves would be to go to the root. We need to find out what's causing this. A lesson I personally learned on September 11th, and something my friends and I discussed quite a bit, is that obviously we're doing something. If we're driving people, 19 people, to hijack our planes and give their lives to prove their point, we need to look into why they're so desperate to take such an action. And to me, it seems we need to be putting our efforts and money into figuring that out.
But you don't think the online futures market would have increased our intelligence, our information about what's happening in regions like the Middle East that could have helped to look into that question that you just raised?
Yeah, I feel it possibly could have maybe help us in our intelligence efforts to some extent, but I think we would benefit greater from looking at why we're driving these people to take such desperate actions.
James Surowiecki, it was the wrong priority. What do you say?
Well, I actually think one of the interesting things about this market that as far as I can tell, almost no one has written about, is that most of the contracts that this market would have offered were what are sometimes called combinatorial. So they would basically ask you to combine, they would allow you to combine two different kinds of probabilities. So they would say, if such and such a thing happened, what is the likelihood of something else? And Robin Hanson gave the example of, if the United States moved its troops out of Saudi Arabia, what would the impact on Saudi stability be? So in that sense, I mean, markets are obviously to some extent blunt instruments in terms of getting at the kinds of questions that the caller was asking. But that would actually be a way, I think, of to some extent getting at maybe some of the dynamics here. In other words, if the market really thought that moving troops out of U.S. troops out of Saudi Arabia would have a massively beneficial effect on Saudi stability, it might give you some clues one way or the other about, you know, what the motives are. I mean, I suspect the motive question is a very, very complicated one that markets are not particularly well equipped to answer. But I do think that in a strange way, the sort of regional specific questions were really the ones that the caller was interested in. So
can I just comment? I think he's identified a key point. I think that it is the failure of these economies, that the high unemployment rate that leads to a fertile feeding ground for this kind of terrorism. And the United States has been providing less foreign assistance, less assistance to developing countries relative to the size of our economy than Europe and Japan. And it's really an embarrassment. And we should be, I think he's right on saying that we should be making a greater effort at helping these economies grow, not in an ideological way, but in a fundamental way of trying to understand what's wrong, what's not working in their economies. And unless we do that, the intelligence about an explosion isn't going to help us a great deal. We're just going to have the opportunity to watch it take place. Second point I want to make is that there are a variety of ways of gathering this kind of intelligence. Yes, it is important to get in touch with what is going on in these countries. You can have focus groups. You can have widespread discussion groups. The question is, markets are likely to have a very biased group of participants. It's not the ordinary workers, the average citizen that's going to be participating in these futures markets. It's going to be more likely wealthier people. And they are the ones that are going to be providing the information. In some cases, they may have more information, but the fundamental point is, if we want to understand what is really going on in these economies, we have to dig deeper.
Indeed. Joseph Stiglitz. Well, we believe in collective intelligence here on The Connection, so let's get our callers in too. Our number again is 1-800-423-8255 or 1-800-423-TALK. We'd like to hear from you. And Bob is now on the line from Norwood, Massachusetts. Bob, what point would you like to make?
This is an incredibly innovative idea. And of course, it's what is really a shame here is that you know, we're not going to really have an opportunity to see if it would work or not. And certainly the function of research is to determine that. And it's very important that the sort of people who are capable of innovating approaches like such as this one acquiring a better understanding of global events. It's important that they stay engaged and keep innovating these ideas. So squelching them before we even have an opportunity to see if they're viable or not is in the larger sense destructive to the whole process. And certainly a research project like this doesn't detract from our ability to pursue other efforts, economic development and the other things that were mentioned. And this is the kind of thing that that I hope this is an example of the private sector and the tools that the private sector uses being applied to a greater good, and I hope that someone in the private sector, such as one of the major trading organizations or some such thing, takes up this project.
So you think it would have worked then?
I don't know if it would have worked, but it's a very clever idea, and we're cheating ourselves out of learning if it would work, and that is really cutting off our nose to despite our face. Clearly, this is something too politically sensitive for the government to undertake. Then the private sector should do it, you know, working with the academic community and pursue it in a way that can test it viably without perhaps making it as public as it was initially in the early stages of the effort to gain an understanding of whether or not it would work.
Bob, Massachusetts, thank you very much for joining us with that point. Although some might say that if it was such a good idea, the market would have taken it up on its own, because that's, the business of business is to do business and make money. James Surowiecki, isn't that the point? That someone else would have tried it long ago if it was something that was a good tool.
Well, not really, because there's actually a collective action problem here. I mean, the way the market would have been set up, the government was actually, or Net Exchange, the company that was running it, was going to serve as what's called a market maker. In other words, it was going to be the other side of whatever bet you took, and then it would essentially go out and try to find someone else to take the other side of the bet. It would be something like a bookie, only instead of a bookie who gets takes a cut for himself on every trade, the government was actually going to lose, was willing to lose money on every trade in order to create this market. So, in other words, for a business to start to do what the government was doing, it's not necessarily clear that there was going to be profit for it in there. And while it may have been a good idea for all the traders together, the traders can't get together and start a market on their own just to create a place to trade. I mean, there has to be someone who's going to benefit from the creation of this market in the first place. But can I say other thing about what the caller said about the testing of it? And this, I think, speaks to what Professor Stiglitz said about the bias towards the wealthy. It's obviously true that, the average guy on the street in Jordan would not have been trading in this market. I think the people who organized the market did hope that people in the Middle East who would not normally speak to the CIA or to any American organization and who would not participate in discussion or focus groups, either out of fear of being turned over to their own governments or out of patriotism or whatever, would be willing to participate in this market. I think the point is that regardless of how the bias, the participants were biased, we would know whether or not they were right or wrong. I mean, the great virtue of this market, as opposed to, say, the stock market, is that it was a finite market. In other words, when August 2004 rolled around, you would know if civil stability in Jordan had risen or declined. So by the end of the six quarters, which was what this pilot program was going to run, we would have some sense of whether or not this was a good idea at all. So that even if the participants were biased, if their predictions were accurate, then I think, you know, where they came from, where they got their information from is in a sense irrelevant, because what we were interested in was whether or not they were making accurate predictions. And if they didn't, then we would have known that as well. So I think that the great virtue of this market is that there was a simple criteria. You were either right or you were wrong.
But he did make another point, though, which is basically that political correctness killed it. We didn't get a chance to see whether it actually worked. Justice Stiglitz, is this really the problem, is that it was killed for completely different reasons, that people found it morally repugnant and simply an idea too much, that simply couldn't bear this idea that people would make money on perhaps the death of others, either in the United States or abroad?
Well, I think the point that the caller made is a good one, that we shouldn't allow political correctness to determine what are good research programs, that quite often we do need to experiment, go beyond the box, think about new ideas. Ironically, in certain areas, the Bush administration has been suppressing research that would be enormously valuable in other areas. So there's a little bit of an hypocrisy here.
But you didn't believe this was a good research project, though, to pick you up on your first point.
I think it was a potentially good research project. There are an enormously large number of good research projects.
But using the market in this particular way, by picking you back to your first comment that you thought it was an absurd idea to use this particular tool in this particular area.
I think that's right. What I was going to say is that I've been on committees at the National Science Foundation where you face a very difficult time. You have a limited research, a great difficulty. You have a limited research budget, and you have to decide what are the best prospects for research.
Well, that's...
And my judgment would have been that this is clearly an absurd idea. I would not have funded this research project.
Well, others would have.
Not because it's not PC, but because I know enough about this area to know that the prospects of a good return of a good market are very low.
Well, some people agree with you and some people don't, and we'd like to hear from our callers. 1-800-423-8255. 1-800-423-TALK. I'm Lise Doucette on The Connection. Should we use the marketplace to assess the probability of political and economic events, including terrorist attacks? Stay with us. I'm Lise Doucette, standing in for Dick Gordon on The Connection. Today we're discussing the online futures market for terrorism. I had an idea of the Pentagon that was killed last week, but did political correctness get rid of an idea that was actually a good one? One that would have helped us to predict the possibility not just of a terrorist attack, but social and political movements across the Middle East. We have two guests with us, James Surowiecki, a financial columnist for The New Yorker, Joseph Stiglitz, who teaches economics and finance at Columbia University, a Nobel Prize winner for economics. We're going to take a caller first, though. Bubba is calling us from Virginia Beach. Bubba, what would you like to say about this idea?
Well, I work for the Department of Defense. I'm absolutely opposed to it. It has no guarantees. Our enemies have a significant amount of assets. They could throw a $2 or $3 million, I guess, venture onto what target they would like somebody to concentrate on, and give us a diversionary tactic. I don't see anything in this that would prevent that. And I'd like to comment on that, please. And I'll take your comments off the air.
James Surowiecki, could have been abused.
Well, what he's talking about is essentially a kind of diversionary bet. So it would throw the intelligence community's attention in one direction while they were planning something else. I have a couple things to say about that. One is obviously that there would be very few chances for that, simply because there were going to be, as I said before, very few contracts offered on the kinds of specific events that a terrorist might want to either bet on or against. So, you know, there was going to be no, basically, let's anticipate the next 9/11 event, a bet as far
but
as
why
I can
wouldn't
tell.
There have been contracts on that? Because isn't that one of the main issues that's preoccupying the Pentagon? Where is the next attack going to come from? What are the next threats? We were hardly finished the war in Iraq, where the White House and the Pentagon was talking about Syria and Iran.
Well, I think the main reason is just that the people who set this up recognize the same kinds of problems that we've been talking about, which is to say that it was unlikely that there would necessarily be a lot of information out there about where the next specific Al-Qaeda attack would occur. So while you might have a contract about, you know, increased levels of terrorist activity more generally, my suspicion is that there was no anticipation that this was going to allow us to penetrate into the inner circles of Hamas. So I think that's one answer. The other answer, though, is a little bit maybe more interesting, which is to say, even if there were specific event securities, like, say, the assassination of Arafat, there were going to be, relatively speaking, very few of those. So the only way, really, to make a diversionary bet would be to bet against what you were going to do. In other words, if you were going to if you were planning to assassinate Arafat, you would place a bet saying that Arafat wasn't going to be assassinated. Well, yeah, there are two distinctions. There's a distinction we need to make here in terms of the price. In other words, of the the information that the price was conveying, that would be distorted. But my impression from talking to the head of the guy who was running this was that the CIA would be looking for suspicious activity in either direction. And so, if a major bet were laid down against assassinating Arafat, that would make them pay a lot of attention to what was going to happen to Arafat. Again, the bettors would be anonymous, as Professor Stiglitz said. Otherwise, no one would bet. So it wasn't that they were going to haul in the guy who made the big bet. But it would, I think, actually draw attention to the very thing the terrorists were trying to draw their attention away from.
But whether or not it would have worked, the fact is that, like all markets, this would have been open to abuse. You've written that you thought it would have been effective because traders have no other incentive than making the right prediction. But, of course, there's a lot at stake in many of the political and social events in the Middle East. Others would have used it, whether governments who don't want there to be a prediction that their country will become more or less unstable, or particular militant groups who would benefit from instability.
That you were referring to earlier, James, referring to, which is what would be the consequences of a troop pullout from Saudi Arabia on stability in Saudi Arabia? If the Saudi military did not want to pull out, they would manipulate that market to say, oh, that will lead to terrible consequences. If they did want a pullout, they would manipulate the market the other way. So there are enormous numbers of possibilities, not just for the specific acts of terrorism, but even for the mood kinds of variables that were identified earlier.
Two sides of the coin. Let's bring in JJ, who's on the line from Lunenburg in Massachusetts. JJ, what do you want to say about this idea?
My concern about this from the beginning has been that whatever you're betting on, be it unrest or a specific event, my understanding would be that the United States government would be taking specific action to try to thwart that, which makes for a very distorted market. Like, if you're going to say, I think there's going to be increased unrest in Syria, the United States government, seeing that, if a lot of people are betting on that, are going to take whatever steps it takes to make sure that doesn't happen.
Indeed.
So how does this market work?
So in other words, then there's two problems there. The people who are betting and in the hope that they will make money, won't make money, because then the United States will intervene to make Syria less stable. And then we have the other problem that people are trying to influence the market. But James Surowiecki, what do you say to that?
Well, I actually think that the point the caller just made is, to my mind, is the one significant problem in the market. I think the fact that in terms of the mood or whatever we want to call them, these sort of bigger questions, we'll take unrest in Syria. Frankly, that's not the kind of thing that I think the United States can act to stop in a direct way. And so I actually think the problem there is
why not? You have
less.
A package in Congress. You stop putting pressure on Hafez al-Assad, on President Assad. You could take action to try bolster the authority and power.
Sure, but those kinds of actions, any intelligent trader would take the possibility of those kinds of actions into account. So, in a sense, the possibility of U.S. intervention in those cases would be effectively priced in. I mean, assuming that the traders are in any sense rational, the possibility of U.S. intervention would be priced into the market. Does that make sense?
That's exactly why these markets aren't one of the reasons why these markets wouldn't work very well. They're so complicated. You're asking somebody in the Middle East to make a judgment not only about what terrorist or what mood in the Middle East is. You're making him make a judgment about American political processes that not even we fully understand.
Well, indeed. In fact, most of the events of the Middle East, having been a correspondent there for 5 years, are the ones that are totally unexpected. Who would have predicted the assassination of Yitzhak Rabin? Who would have predicted some of the assassinations of some of the bombers by Israel?
Well, I think you need to. But I mean, let's be fair about what we were expecting these markets potentially to do. I mean, no one was suggesting that these markets would become the United States' chief form of intelligence about the Middle East. I mean, the idea was that they might be a supplementary to, you know, I mean, no one was suggesting we disband the CIA and replace it with this market. So the thought was that there is a lot of information out there that, for a variety of reasons, the American intelligence agencies do not have access to because people are not willing to talk to them, or because it's simply the kind of street-level data that is difficult for an intelligence agency to acquire, particularly in a region where there is significant anti-Americanism. And so the notion there is that there is all this information out there that we do not have access to, and a market might serve as a way of aggregating it. I don't think the fact that the market would have had limitations. I mean, all markets are subject to manipulation. All markets, many markets, are complicated. I mean, think about the way the oil futures market works. I mean, the complications in that market are immense. But the fact that there were imperfections in the market, or in the ability of the market to perform, doesn't mean that it would not have added valuable intelligence. I mean, if it had made our intelligence estimates 10% more successful, wouldn't it? I mean, it only cost $3 million. That was the budget. I mean, the budget was minuscule for this idea.
Well, let's get some intelligence from our callers. Hugh is on the line from Durham in North Carolina. Hugh, what do you want to say?
Hi. I'm somewhat surprised by the sense of shock or moral outrage, repugnance, as you put it, over this issue, because really, the reality is that the markets have always been amoral. I mean, capitalism doesn't worry about the niceties of a particular speculation. And, for example, in the events leading up to the Iraq War, there was speculation on gold, there was speculation on oil, all these things. And we're talking about a war. So I find that puzzling. And
but you don't think it's in a class of its own, that we can't sort of use the market to predict events or to analyze events that could possibly include terrorist attacks, the assassination of political leaders? That shouldn't really be in the same category as foreign futures and political elections.
There's always been a longstanding argument on the efficient market theory. And, you know, the reality is if markets were that efficient, we'd all be rich. Beyond that, I have a question as to the technique that's being used. Why couldn't a simple polling effort be made as opposed to using a market situation or scenario? Why couldn't people simply do an anonymous online internet poll? Seems to me you could target your audience and get as good as or better information in that manner than a market scenario.
Hugh, you called us with a very good comment and a very good suggestion. Thank you for calling us from Durham, North Carolina. Justice Stiglitz, do you want to take up his first point that markets are amoral?
Well, actually, can I take up the second point? Because I think that's actually raising an important question. And that is, there are alternative ways of trying to extract information. The market process has some advantages and some disadvantages. The advantage is that because people are putting down their own money, they think about it a lot harder than when they're just expressing an opinion in a poll. So that there is, in a sense, a higher degree of reliability in the information that is extracted in the market mechanism. The disadvantage is that it weights the information in a particular way, and it's manipulable, so that rich people's vote gets weighed more, their views get reflected more than in a structured random sample. Now, James has pointed out a number of times that this would allow people who might feel reluctant to participate in a U.S. government-sponsored survey to register their feelings and provide information. I think that speaks to an important point, which is that the United States and the West more generally should have been exerting efforts to try to create strong domestic research institutions, not relying on the United States, but there ought to be. In the United States, we have a whole number of think tanks and polling institutions that give us information about the state of mind of the American populace. We don't rely on the American government to give us that information, and we should have been working to try to create stronger institutions in the Middle East as well that do similarly. And that would have been a better allocation of resources, I think, than this particular venture futures markets.
Well, of course, James Siriki did point out that this was actually a very small budget. James, do you want to respond to Joseph Stiglitz?
Well, as I said at the beginning when I mentioned the comparison to the, you know, the website Google, I actually think the question of the poll is kind of an interesting one. But as Professor I would agree with Professor Stiglitz that, you know, sort of money helps focus people's attention and serves as a filtering process. I think the other thing is that in terms of the kinds of questions that were being asked, because you want an ever-changing and sort of continuous, you essentially want a continuous verdict, it's actually in some sense almost more practically easier to do it with a market. But I do think
and a lot of people could have participated who actually didn't have much informed knowledge on the way events would unfold.
Yeah, the truth is though that as long as the uninformed people are essentially making their decisions at random, that is to say, as long as they're not biased in one direction or the other, then the uninformed people verdict will essentially cancel themselves out, assuming that there's an equal number of uninformed people. The only thing I would say about the second half of what Professor Stiglitz said is I think that's very right. I mean, if you think about the absence of information we have about a lot of these countries, you know, that's clearly a place where we fell down on the job. I mean, in a sense, I almost think of this as an attempt to kind of fill the gap there in a very tentative and obviously not in any sense sort of comprehensive way. I mean,
okay,
I
James,
keep coming,
Sir Ricky, I'm
sorry.
Afraid this has been a fascinating discussion, but unfortunately the clock is working against us. We're going. Let me just bring in for one last comment Joseph Stiglitz, who did say it was absurd, but seemed to have found some virtue in it. What else could be done, Joseph Stiglitz?
Well, I think the point that the last caller made is right, that we should try to develop a whole variety of mechanisms for extracting information, gaining a better understanding of what is going on, not only in the Middle East, but all over the rest of the world. The fact is that we have not been supporting our universities in a way. One of the problems, the cutbacks in the budget, these huge tax cuts that the country can't afford, is that there's going to be cutbacks in education.
Indeed.
And that means there will be fewer people who will be able to read and write Arabic,
and
understand what's going on in Indonesia.
There will be threats as well to the world in which we live. Joseph Stiglitz, we thank you for joining us with all of your insight and concerns. Joseph Stiglitz, who teaches economics and finance at Columbia University. You also heard from James Siriki and Robin Hanson, who was involved in the development of the idea of an online futures market for terrorism. I'm Lise Doucette, and you're listening to The Connection here on NPR. We'll be right back.